This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
I think let's start with the first question. So the last time we had spoken to you, PJ Haggerty had not entered the transfer portal.
Yep.
He did, however, enter the transfer portal with the designation do not contact. Typically, when we see that, that means it's decided he's either found a location, but basically he is moving on. Is that how you interpret these events, or is this maybe something a little different?
I think that based on some conversations that I have had, that unless there is some major, it would be, unless there is an about face, and I think it would take an about face from both sides. We've probably seen the last of PJ Haggerty in Memphis. Now, in a Memphis uniform, I should say. Now, again, this stuff is just so fluid. It just when you think you know something else happens. And so you just never say never. You really, really don't with any of this stuff. And so I want to make that very, very clear. Like, there is a universe where, you know, fences can be mended or whatever, you know, you get back to the table. Both parties get back to the table and something gets worked out. But I think given that, given the do not contact, given the other things that have been reported, the fact that PJ is reportedly asking for $4 million to play 30-something games of college basketball, the fact that it not only does he want that, but he also wants to play primarily point guard, I don't get the sense that either side is in the headspace that they want to get back to the bargaining table.
So if we take the report from last week, the asking for $4 million to me, like, that did not catch me by surprise. Did I think that was a high number?
No.
But when you saw JT Toppin is, who knows what the number is, but it was reported as $4 million. When
right.
you saw that, to me, it's like, okay, as you've laid out, there's only him, and then there's what, one other All-American that could have been available other than PJ?
Both guys at Purdue. Kaufman-Wren.
Yes, Kaufman-Wren and then Braden Smith. And Braden stayed. I think Kaufman-Wren stayed as well, right?
Yes.
So they both stayed. There's only going to be, like, to me, it's like there's only returning All-Americans. Okay, that price made sense to me. What I thought was the curveball, if you will, like, I'm sitting 2-0 and I'm thinking, all right, here's a hitter's pitch. Like, I didn't see that coming. It was the wants to play primarily point guard, because to me, it almost feels like those are mutually exclusive. If I'm going to pay $4 million for PJ Haggerty, I'm not paying $4 million to say, all right, we're going to try and put you in a position where we develop you to be better for the draft, rather than I'm paying you to win games for me this year. Like, that to me was what caught me by surprise. Did it catch you by surprise?
Yeah, a little bit. Well, on one front, yes, because, you know, PJ Haggerty did not become a second team All-American by playing point guard.
Right.
So, like, if that's the position that you this is reported. These are reports. This is not coming directly from PJ or anybody in his camp. These are reports. if that is what you are dead set on doing with the next season of your collegiate eligibility, well, then whoever gets you is not getting, well, you don't know if you're getting a second team All-American.
Right.
Like, P.J. Haggerty at the two is a second team All-American. P.J. Haggerty at the two at Memphis was a second team All-American. That does not necessarily mean that you will be a second. P.J. Haggerty in a different uniform at the one would be a second team All-American. And so from that standpoint, it was surprising. However, when that report came out, that was part of the condition, that was one of their criteria. That did not surprise me at all. Like when he signed with Memphis last off season, I had multiple conversations with his dad and people around him. And those conversations continued in the season that like they very much believe that he is a point guard. And, you know, I mean, like, who knows? Maybe he is. But, you know, based on what we saw this past season with his high turnover rate, there's that issue that whoever gets him is going to have to deal with if they put him at the one. And then the other issue is that, again, maybe he is an All-American as a point guard, but that's not what, you don't know that yet. You know that you're getting an All-American shooting guard. You do not know that player would be an All-American as a point guard.
Another thing that developed last week after we spoke on the show, there is a court case that involves a Rutgers football player, if not players. I always struggle to keep it. There's a North Carolina lawsuit that involves Carolina and Duke football players. There is another one in New Jersey that involves at least one Rutgers player, but essentially they're suing for not 5 years to play four, but 5 years to play five. And it's an eligibility concern. To your understanding, if they are granted an injunction, because let's be clear, what happened was Diego Pavia basically sued saying my JUCO eligibility should not count against my overall eligibility. He was granted an injunction for 1 year. He was suing for both years, but he was granted an injunction for 1 year. The NCAA says this doesn't apply to everyone, but we can't do anything about it. So if it applies to him, it applies to everyone. Right. Would this be something that would factor in for Dane Danger perhaps making a return?
I don't think so. I think there's a lot. That would be too many things that would have to happen in a short amount of time for him to benefit from that. I don't see that all those all that being cleared up before. You know, before, like anytime, like in time for Dane to like, yes, the season doesn't start until November, but like, you know, he's got to, at some point he's going to have to like start, either he needs to know, yes, I can do it or no, I can't. And that point in time is coming up soon, much sooner than November for him. So, I don't know that would apply to him. I think his situation is different based on the conversation that I had with his mom last week, when that whole, crazy situation happened, with various reports and, you know, tweets and certain things like that, those things. But, I think his situation, like he is, you know, his waiver request is going to be, they're going the waiver request route. They're not going to wait on the courts to rule on that other stuff.
Now, also you spoke with his mother last week because we saw Dane went into the transfer portal, and I did think Goodman pointed it out pretty well that there seems to be a different type of guys in the portal in the category, which would be a Hail Mary. And I believe, was it our boy Jaquan Walton that went into the portal and it was out of eligibility? And I believe Jaquan never played another college minute, right?
That is correct. I mean, just look at it 15 minutes ago, Jaden Zachary and Ian Sheflin from Clemson both put their names in the transfer portal. They are currently out of eligibility. So it's not, it would not be unheard of for Dane. It wouldn't have been too nuts, but Jaquan was out of eligibility.
Okay. So the reason why I bring it up though is, all right, let's say this Hail Mary hits and his mother is indeed correct that if he plays, he's playing at Memphis. How does that impact Memphis's NIL budget? Because it seems to me like right now, if they can get Dane back, they'd love to have Dane back, but it also seems like they're operating like they think they're not getting Dane back.
So here is the way I'm thinking about it.
All right.
Or looking at the situation, like, and this is just my gut feel on the on what's happening here, on the circumstances. I have a gut feeling that there are certain entities or individuals who have committed some NIL money to if Dane gets a year back, then
earmarking it. If they'll pay for Dane, but they're not just saying here's all the money. Like they're saying if Dane, it would be earmarked for Dane Danger rather than that necessarily is, like it is conditional. The donation to the collective is conditional on Dane Danger.
That is what makes sense to me. Again,
yeah, I can buy that.
Saying that is what makes sense to me based on the circumstances. Because if he does get the waiver and, you've been going along thinking that you have this much, like you're talking about a guy who was a first team all conference. He was, he was one of the best bigs in the country toward down the stretch. It's not going to come cheap. His services are not going to come cheap. So it just based on conversations that I've had with different people on both sides of the fence, that makes sense to me. It doesn't seem like if he gets it, then where does the money come from would be an issue.
We're talking with Jason Munns, Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. Make sure you follow him on Twitter on X at Munsley. And then we did see some actual names added last week, and so we have Sincere Parker on Friday. Mm-hmm. We had, I believe it was Wednesday, correct, Zachary Davis and Julius Thedford. I think that all happened since we've last talked.
Yeah, that's right. Zachary Davis, the I think he's like a 6'7" guard from South Carolina, and Julius Thedford, who's from Memphis, played at West Kentucky his true freshman year last year. Those two have committed, and then Sincere Parker from McNeese State.
Okay, so when you look at it, I mean, I had pointed this out last week when people were obviously had the gut punch of PJ Haggerty, and I had pointed out when last year the roster was getting reestablished, I would say the general feeling towards the roster was lukewarm. Not from you. You were very clear. Listen, I don't know if this is a Final Four or bust team, but you believed that this was a roster that was going to be very, very good. Mm-hmm. Could this be the same type of roster construction this offseason?
I don't know that I am quite as high on what's happened so far as I was at this time a year ago. I mean, we had a very good idea of what PJ Haggerty was. Everybody knew what Tyrese Hunter was.
Yeah.
Everybody knew what Kobe Rogers was. Moussa Cisse, you felt decent about Dane Danger. You didn't really know. He was kind of a question mark. It seems like there is not as, like, the ceiling doesn't feel as high based on what, who's in the boat right now. That being said, I do think that what Penny and the Tigers have done so far is very, very solid. And I'm also taking into account, those are the names that have committed since we last talked. There's been some pretty interesting visitors also. since we last talked. Guy from Villanova, 6'9 guard, Chris Parker. Guy from Rice, 6'7 wing, Jacob Dahr. Aaron Bradshaw, the 7-footer from Ohio State, who started his career at Kentucky. And then today, Kansas State, former Michigan point guard, Doug McDaniel is on campus. Like, if they can get, you know, a couple of those, three of those, maybe even all four of them, then I still don't know that I'm as high on the roster as I was on the pieces they were adding last year, like the from a ceiling standpoint. But people that I've talked to, you know, about Zach Davis, about Sincere Parker, like the way people are viewing those additions, people who, you know, have coached against them and that sort of thing, like they're viewing those ads as like that's a pretty sneaky good move for Memphis, is kind of the vibe that I'm picking up on those two guys especially. And I like Julius Thedford myself, and others do too, but I really think that's a really, really good addition for Penny. So, and then again, you know, again, if you tack on a couple of these other ones, Doug McDaniel, Aaron Bradshaw, perhaps Jacob Dahr, Chris Parker, then it's time to, you can start to see it coming together at that point. But so far, I just don't feel like there's anybody that's been added where you can point to it and be like, all right, that's a home run. I don't know. I felt that way about Tyrese Hunter.
Sure.
And a little bit about BJ Haggerty, but I haven't had that feeling yet.
I think the other aspect of this that makes it difficult to evaluate is it seems to me like other than like Michigan, who seemed like they got this thing done with like immediately, I don't really know how, like when you look around, it feels like everyone's kind of in a similar spot. Like, hey, we added this guy, we added that guy, but it seems to me the overarching theme was it felt like to me everybody thought this was going to move more quickly, I think, than it did. And maybe that is because the house settlement still hasn't been approved. Maybe it is
part of it,
you know, or perhaps, hey, some of these numbers are really, really high asks and everybody's kind of going like, well, I don't, you know, maybe if that number comes down a little bit, like maybe, but is that a fair way to categorize it? It feels to me like this has not moved collectively, not just for Memphis, but around the country. It feels like it hasn't moved as quickly as maybe people had suspected it was going to.
Yeah. And I think those are probably the two biggest reasons why is the house settlement. A lot of people expected it would be done before now, and it's not. And you know, there's just a lot of uncertainty with that and you know, the rev share and all that stuff. Like, there's just a lot of uncertainty there, and there's, you know, and honestly, the way I have felt about this off season is that there was a lot of activity very early on.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of these agents were pushing these players to get stuff done before the house settlement got passed or approved or whatever. And then when it slowed down, then the cycle slowed down a little bit as well. And then the other part of it, as you mentioned, is like some of these numbers, like a lot of, you know, like this stuff's getting crazy, really, really, really crazy. Some of these numbers that these players are getting. And I think, you know, the schools and the coaches and stuff are like, well, you know, we've kind of, maybe we've gone a little bit too fast in our haste to beat the other team to a guy. We've kind of, you know, like we've hit the finish line a lot sooner than we thought we would from a budget standpoint, but we still got spots to fill, and it's created this, I don't know, it's created this weird environment that I think you see playing out, and now everybody's sort of slowed down compared to the way it was like the first week or two.